We're reading in Rabash's social writings, page 158, concerning above reason. We remind you can ask questions at kab.tv, and selected questions will be aired live. So again, Rabash's social writings, page 158, concerning above reason. Concerning above reason, we should use this tool both between friends and between an individual and the Creator. However, there is a difference between them. Between an individual and the Creator, this tool must remain forever. In other words, one must never underestimate this means called faith above reason. But between a person and his friend, if he can see his friend's virtue between reason, within reason, it is all the better. And yet, the nature of the body is to the contrary. It always sees his friend's fault and not his virtues. This is why our sages said, judge every person favorably. In other words, although within reason you see that your friend is wrong, you should still try to judge him favorably. And this can be above reason. That is, although logically he cannot justify him, above reason he can justify him nonetheless. However, if he can justify him within reason, this is certainly better. If, for example, he sees that the friends are at a higher degree than his own, he sees within reason how he is in utter lowliness compared to his friends. That is, all the friends keep the schedule of arriving at the seminary, and they take greater interest in all that is happening among the friends, to help anyone in any way they can, and they immediately implement every advice for the work from the teachers in actual fact, etc. It certainly affects him and gives him strength to overcome his laziness, both when he needs to wake up before dawn and when he is awakened. Also during the study, his body is more interested in the lessons, since otherwise he will lag behind his friends. Also, if anything that concerns Kedusha, holiness, he must take it more seriously, because the body cannot tolerate lowness. Moreover, when his body looks at the friends, it sees within reason that they are all working for the Creator. And then his body too lets him work for the Creator. And the reason why the body helps him shift to in order to bestow is, as mentioned, the body is unwilling to tolerate lowness. Instead, everybody has pride, and he is unwilling to accept a situation where his friend is greater than him. Thus, when he sees that his friends are at a higher degree than his own, this causes him to ascend in every way. This is the meaning of what our sages said. Author's envy increases wisdom. In other words, when all the friends look at the society as being at a high level, both in thoughts and in actions, it is natural that each and every one must raise his degree to a higher level than he has by the qualities of his own body. This means that even if innately he has no craving for great desires or is not intensely attracted to honor, still, through envy, he can acquire additional powers that he doesn't have in his own nature. Instead, the force of the quality of envy in him has procreated new powers within him, which exist in the society. And through them he has received those new qualities, meaning powers that were not installed in him by his progenitors. Thus, now he has new qualities that society has procreated in him. It turns out that a person has qualities that his parents bequeathed to their children, and he has qualities that he acquired from the society, which is a new possession. And this comes to him only through bonding with the society and the envy that he feels towards the friends when he sees that they have better qualities than him, than his own. This motivates him to acquire their good qualities, which he does not have, and of which he is jealous. Thus, through the society, he gains new qualities that he adopts by seeing that they are at a higher degree than he than himself. And he is envious of them. This is the reason why now he can be greater than when he didn't have a society, since he acquires new powers from the society. However, this can be said if he truly sees the friends at a higher degree than his own. But at the same time, the evil inclination shows him the lowness of the society and makes him think, on the contrary, this society that you wish to bond with is not for you. They are many degrees below your own. Thus, from such a society, not only will you gain nothing, but rather, even the inborn forces that you have, which are small, are larger than those within the society. Thus, you should in fact stay away from them. And if you do want to bond with them, at least see that they all obey you. Meaning, follow your understanding of how the society should behave, how they sit when they gather, how they study, and how they pray. In other words, either they are all serious, and God forbid that they even should smile or ever discuss the friends' worldly matters, if they make a living, or how they make a living, easily or with difficulties, or if he has a job where he doesn't suffer, or has a difficult landlord who give him a hard time, or if he has co-workers, and or if his co-workers don't mock him for being orthodox, etc. All those matters are of no importance, and it is a waste thinking about them, for they are only corporeal matters. He, on the other hand, came to partake in an assembly of Israel for the noble purpose, which is to be true servant of the Creator. It follows that when he wishes to forget about his corporeality, when in fact his corporeality deeply concerns him, and he lets it go and does not want to remember, the friends come and begin to discuss their friend's corporeality. And he does not care about his friend's corporeality, since now he wants spirituality. So why are the friends suddenly messing up my mind with mundane stuff, which is of no concern to me at all? Is this why I want to forget about my corporeality, to make time to think about the friend's corporeality? Can this be? Thus, you'd better listen to me and stay away from them, his buddy tells him, and you will certainly be more successful. Why mess up your mind with such nonsense? Therefore, when the buddy shows him the inferiority of his friends, what can he answer his buddy when it comes with arguments of a righteous one? In other words, the body doesn't advise him to turn away from the society because the body is suggesting that he be wicked. On the contrary, his body tells him, by staying away from the society, you will be righteous, and you will think only about your spirituality, and when necessary, of your corporeality as well. Therefore, if a person believes that without a society it is impossible to advance and achieve love of the Creator, since this is the springboard for exiting self-love and entering self-love of the Creator, he has no other choice but to go above reason.
We can see that from our experience in life, in regular life of this world, that a person does not change. All the qualities one is born with remain, and they only take on a certain subtle correction in terms of what he uses more or less. But in the end of the day, the way he is born is how he lives and dies. And this is something that is tangibly visible. Nothing can really influence us. And in fact, the society can't do that, doesn't also have the goal of actually changing the human. There are no means for that. The change can only be if we have qualities that are meant to change, which are not of this world. They're spiritual qualities, of which we only have a small ishimo recollection, and there is a means, which is the environment through which I can draw to that ishimo the light that will take care of it and actualize it correctly. And then I take on spiritual qualities, additional qualities. Just as I have my corporeal body, through which I feel it and its environment and the entire world and my life. Similarly, from the Rishimo in me, I can beget my spiritual body on my own by the light that reforms, growing it, and feel the spiritual environment and the spiritual life. That is an additional upper reality, more than what I have already, which is called this world. And all of it is by developing it above reason. Why? Because my reason is always in the will to receive, and I cannot convince myself while in my will to receive to develop spiritually. Only if I raise myself, understanding that there is no choice, that the environment forces me through the study, the guidance, when I finally hear through the effort, the light that reforms gives me that hearing. And then I can force myself, literally tie myself, my ego, my corporeal inclinations, and begin to work against them. And then I have to be accountable to why am I doing that. Won't help me if I just talk about it. I have to develop such a desire that draws the light. And therefore, here I'm in dependency on the environment that can give me the additional deficiency. And to the extent that I can lower myself, bow before the environment, act out, literally play as a little one, hear what everyone says, restrict myself, subjugate myself, accordingly, I'll be able to receive from them higher values, so as to actualize them, which will require the light that reforms, and thus I'll be able to advance. All these actions that I do against my natural desire are called above reason. For now, after that, there's also above reason in the spiritual sense. But in the meantime, as we work in the group, that's how we need to do it. Yes.
A student is asking, what are the good qualities in the friends that I'm supposed to be envy of and to adopt? What kind of qualities are we talking about?
Friends are those parts of my soul that I connect with from my part of the soul, which I call the spark, and their parts are called sparks as well, and we have to connect them to a single vessel. And that's why a friend, to me, is the same spark that exists in everyone, of those that are with me in the general group. And it's not his body or his corporeal characteristics, only the spark is what I need. And so, from the spark, when I see how much he's capable of lowering oneself, work towards them, appreciate the society, appreciate the goal, the path, accordingly, if I feel envy, and it's a positive envy, not that I delete the other or disrespect the other. On the contrary, I actually learn from him as a greater one, which is unpleasant, seeing the others as great and oneself as smaller. And they advance and I am lagging behind. But if a person is capable of that, then he advances. Our entire problem is subjugation for now. And those who take pride, those who want to show themselves in control in some way, disregarding the honor of the teacher, the friends, that is simply preventing oneself from advancing.
A student from Hadera is asking, how can the group help a friend practice trampling his ego?
Only through an example. There's no other way. Because even talking about it with each other is not permitted. If there's a certain friend that really erupts with, you know, disrespect and in a rude way, we should only show an example. But if he really harms, then you can somewhat hint to him or in some indirect manner do something about it. But that's on the condition that he doesn't actually incite and harms, because each and every one requires his time of development. It says, don't judge your friend until you're in his place.
Scott from England is asking, what does it mean to justify the friend?
To justify means that if you were in his place, you would be worse. That if he hears and studies and puts efforts and still behaves that way, it indicates that he has a great burdening in his heart, a very powerful inclination, perhaps deeper type of rishimot, and he needs to actualize them by himself, because there's no coercion in spirituality. You can't suppress him. A society that can't stand people who behave that way is not a healthy one. Not a healthy one. We must try to help like towards someone you love, not like towards someone you hate.
The student is asking, is there any opportunity or a situation where it is worthwhile to be interested in the corporeality of the friend, and if so, under which conditions?
Only on the condition that the question is whether he has his necessities. This is called corporeality. Healthcare and the minimal necessities.
What is not in the world of the sparks that what is missing in the world of the sparks that the corporeal world had to be created?
The world of the sparks has the first degree of the spiritual ladder, yet there is no way to enter that level, because all the sparks exist in the will to receive in order to receive. That if there were no corporeal characters, meaning this picture we're living in, as though it exists, without it, we would not have the ability to activate the sparks. By the bodies, by connecting, by building this life and getting confused in it, and yet drawing closer to each other, through that we activate the sparks, and as Rabash writes, until they merge to one big flame.
So the sparks by themselves did not have the ability to perform actions of connection? That's
how?
What I'm asking.
So I'm telling you, the sparks are in a will to receive in order to receive, meaning a corporeal one, the lowest possible. If that corporeal desire, that lowest possible desire, would not have these corporeal depictions and characters, we wouldn't be able to do anything with the spark, because the sparks would just be caged in the ego, and that's it.
But in the breaking, there was the breaking of the masach, there are also vessels of bestowal.
The sparks themselves are broken vessels of bestowal.
So they have the possibility to be corrected. What do they need our world for?
They can only activate the will to receive in bestowing in order to receive. These sparks that exist in us are actually worse than the regular will to receive. That's why it's called Adam Blial, meaning that the man who is not corrected is actually worse than the beast. And we see that this addition of the human over the animal is actually to his detriment, because he corrupts his life and the world all the time in competition, and what's good about it? And these are the sparks working that way. It's the will to receive on the human level.
So the reason for the shattering was in order to bestow, in order to receive?
The purpose of the shattering was in order to integrate the holiness with the shell in a way that the holiness is under the shell.
No, that I understand, but what caused the shattering? That there was, suddenly there was the desire to bestow in order to receive, and that's why it was broken? It breached the first restriction?
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that we are in the corporeal world that is depicted to us in this way, this theater, it helps us reach a state where we influence the sparks through the bodily action, when we convene, when we connect, when we do something together, we actually activate the surrounding lights. All the surrounding lights exist between the corporeal level and the spiritual level. And the more we organize ourselves on the corporeal level, the surrounding lights shine on us from the spiritual level downwards. And that's why we have the opportunity to exit this state and enter independently to the ladder of degrees. Yes.
Regarding envy, what we talked about earlier is that is part of the work in the tenth is to look for points about which I'll envy the friends.
Search for points of envy, sure.
And if there are some friends that I don't manage to be jealous of, then I need to do some work.
Then to judge to the scale of merit that it's you who don't see.
Continuing the question of the friend, if I see that a particular friend doesn't even meet any criteria of Rebbe, doesn't pay master, never gets up for the morning lesson, and only occasionally he participates virtually in things, I'm also supposed to judge him favorably, or he is not even considered a friend?
First, judge to the scale of merit, only on the condition that is not inciting, that is not complaining, that is not ruining. He only lacks positive participation. And then do all kinds of tricks to try to influence him to move forward. But if he just can't, then he can't. But on the condition that there is a society that sets its boundaries and says that within the boundaries of the group you have to do this and this and that, then it's a law for everyone. But it's still a corporeal law, not a spiritual one.
But let's say that his friend has been studying for thousands of years.
It doesn't matter.
He's been with us for a long time.
That's irrelevant.
Still, he's been with us for a long time. He doesn't do anything yet. So should I relate him above reason? As though he's participating with friends who have been here for a long time?
No, no, that's not what I said at all. I said that if I was in his place, I would behave like that and even worse. It's not that I relate to him as a complete righteous. No, there's no one to take an example from here, yet I have to judge him to the scale of merit, meaning that he has such a burdening in his heart.
And also, what has he been harming or not harming? That's really broad. If somebody, say, is pulling people.
This is why we set limits to our group, meaning that, for instance, a friend cannot enter the group if he doesn't follow five conditions, let's say. And for a broader circle, then it's only meeting four conditions, then three, then two, then one. And that's how we set our limits. It's just like in the army or in everywhere where you can see, you know, in school, in you know, academic degrees or science or anything else. So we can do that. but that's in order to guard ourselves.
But let's say Rav says something and he says, well, Rav said it, but I think that Rav is wrong. I think that it's that way, actually.
This is one of the conditions that cannot happen in the inner group.
And if he speaks openly about that, he says, well, Rav says it this way, but I think Rav is wrong. We need to explain to Rav that we are actually that way. And
well, if you ask me, then you understand that I don't care what he says, or in general, if anyone says anything about me. But for you, it is important, because it weakens you, and it doesn't leave you with motivation to advance. That's why we have to deal with these people in a very simple way. Throw them away. To where? To a certain circle where it's permitted, not completely. Give him time. Gradually he'll advance and he'll move forward.
So does that mean that, for example, he can remain in a virtual framework or...
In the virtual society, there should also be circles. There are some closed virtual circles that where it's a shame if these such opinions will appear there. It weakens them.
That's right. For example, you say very clearly, let's say there's somebody who lives in Israel and he has the ability to come to a physical group, he has to come. If, say, there are people that intentionally are pulling others more to be virtual groups, and they say, no, we are virtual groups, we're going to stay virtual, and it doesn't matter if you have a physical group or you don't have the opportunity, then you have to...
We have to understand that the virtual invention happened in order to somewhat complement, only to compensate for the lack of physical gathering. And it never existed before. People always yearned to gather, to have what's called a minyan, 10 people or at least, or even more. And look, if you remember, yesterday we had a convention. It was felt that there is a certain physical gathering and it does something. It was felt.
Very powerfully.
Very powerfully. So if we had the same thing virtually, can you imagine that? That 1,000 people or however how many we had there can really come to this kind of connection and influence each other and I influence them and all in all create such an awakening and sensation internally.
At my level, not at all, but a concrete example. In the previous convention, we had conditions 3 times at least that you come to the morning lesson, maser, and dissemination, and now you open up that convention to everyone.
Yeah.
So for my group, in my group, the difference between those that came and or not was just one friend who, as if, took the opportunity that there were no conditions. The others, even though there were no conditions, actually they didn't come. So what's lacking? How can we awaken them that at least for the open conventions they will show up, not from abroad, from the same country?
So now you see that the problem is not these conditions, rather the inner desire of the person that he doesn't yet understand, doesn't yet feel what a convention is, what the gathering is, but the repulsion to connect with others, which is typical to our ego if we don't benefit anything. So that repulsion is a natural one, and he can't yet convince himself that it's worthwhile for him. What can he do?
And if there are people who even take pride in that, and they say, I have the opportunity to participate in a physical group, and nonetheless, I only participate virtually, as if he's advertising this spirit in the group, then...
So tell him that I'm sorry for him.
I tried, really, following the last convention. I tried to...
No, there's nothing to do.
I tried to awaken them. I cut a piece of clip with you speaking about the virtual groups. and people were trying somehow to, but they say, no, nonetheless, a virtual group is equal to a physical group, and why does Rav not consider us like all the other groups, etc. They have complaints.
I take each and every one into account. Even if they don't want to come and they want to stay virtual, I don't have any inferior relation, even to those who don't want to come or don't want to hear so much, or even those who think that I'm not so right. If a person has some form of contact with the method of correction, I appreciate it. I appreciate him, even if it's not exactly according to our method, meaning he's still searching all kinds of things, okay, that too. And in general, all people, they're not guilty of what's happening to them. We just have to be patient. And the matter is more about how much we connect with these conventions that I hope will be powerful in the sense that we'll come out with a new feeling in a meaningful way. Our inner force will influence everyone, and then those who are farther will come closer.
A year ago we had a congress up north, and there were conditions there also. There was a friend who came with a weaker friend, and the weaker friend wasn't allowed to enter. And then his friend asked, Rav, is it my fault that I didn't draw him here, I didn't help him to meet the conditions? And he said, yes, it is your fault. You did not care for him.
If there are two friends, then sure.
So where is this limit here between awakening the friends and on the other hand, give them the freedom of choice and...
To set a positive, great example, you have to do it. This is your work, and by that you also correct your soul. But more than that, you can't do, because there's no coercion in spirituality. But always show him good examples to stir envy in him. You have to do that.
So between the friends who do hear and who do understand this thing, there must be something that others feel that there is something between them that they don't have, and they'll envy them.
Try, for instance, what you felt in the convention to spread that in our different networks so that those who only study virtually will want to come, because perhaps they didn't feel it so much. But I think that they should have. I really hope that every convention will become this shot of energy and attainment, this great leap of progress.
Can I have a final question about the tents? I was a little confused about the construction of the tents, because on Shabbat, I think a month ago, you said that if there are people who are not meeting our framework, I'm talking about the Petach Tikva framework, this means Maaser, seven times a day, morning lesson and dissemination, then they should create a tent that is according to their spirit. I don't know, a few days later you said, but on the other hand, we should always care for those friends who don't meet the criteria. They're still weaker. So what is now what's now the rule? I later said, fine, I'm going to choose for myself a 10 that does meet the same criteria like Petach Tikva. And later, a few days later, I said, I heard you say, we also should as if mingle with those people who are yet not meeting the criteria. And perhaps we should not break apart the tents and remain in this mingled state. But on the other hand, it is simply impossible to work with a person if he never gets up for the lesson, and you can't meet him for 10 minutes after the lesson. And in general, he's speaking about maybe he can once a week come to some meeting. So what are we even talking about here?
What do you recommend for me?
I recommend you divide it up according to the levels of participation.
And that's how we'll build it each time. You know, I have two actors, Sasha Demidov and Henry David, right?
Yeah, I know them.
What do I do with them?
You activate them and you tell them that they need to put up a piece of theater or a clip and somehow create this...
No, but what do I do? Do I accept them into the tens or not?
Obviously, yes.
But how? How? They're not there. They're not present right now as well.
So good, I guess. But
what's good? It's not good. But there are other times during the day where Henry comes to translate if he can and Sasha Demidov comes to act for us and so forth. What do you do?
Fine, we accept them because they have a justified excuse. But if a person in general doesn't even get up for the lesson and...
It's also... correct excuse, it's justified.
What's the justification?
He's weak.
But as you said in the lesson, then they should have a 10 according to their spirit.
But they also can't put together the 10.
So maybe they're not prepared for the 10, because the 10 is a very serious exercise. I can say that in the Vienna group where I participate, they relate to this with extra seriousness, really. There's no disrespect, disregard for it. They do everything that you say here, and they try to copy it as much as possible to their framework. They connect me virtually, and it's not felt that there's no difference, really.
I can't tell you what to do. Really, I can't. Imagine that you have kids, and these kids are in different problems and different situations. Some are a bit sick or lazy, some hasty. What do you do?
But is it possible that a friend himself would choose his 10 if we're speaking about...
Well, choosing is possible, but again I'm saying we're forbidden to completely take them off and say, you'll be putting yourself in the broken tens. No, you have to try to bring them closer somehow and strengthen them.
And isn't it more beneficial if people...
This will be a plus for you. If you take care of them, you will grow as well.
That's true. You said many times that we don't do it for ourselves. But it is as if work in the group and work in a 10.
Even if there's one or two like that in the 10 that are, let's call them sick, that are, so it's a copy of the human society.
But the situation is a bit maybe different, because in the first 10 that I was in, I had as if a dialogue with another friend, and the other friends for a week and a half, I never heard a single response, nothing, really nothing.
We have to also induce the correction of the world. And people are drawn according to their ability, according to their awakening. But they're drawn, they're not breaking anything purposely. They're doing what they can. So we should be concerned about them.
So in short, you're saying, pick a 10...
No, so let's do it like this. Put them together as a group of 10 and take a few stronger people with you and join their group of 10 in addition to yours.
But it's disallowed to be in two 10s, no? You said?
No, you're going there to help. Why forbidden? Why?
That's what I heard.
The 10 is not something holy. It's just a place for me to nullify myself. And if on another day I go to a different day and continue to different 10 and continue the work, so what? I don't even look at the faces I'm with.
That's clear. That's obvious. So I can keep being with the Vienna group and also take care of a 10 that is, say, a bit sick.
Yes, the Swiss 10.
Not Swiss, the virtual group.
The virtual.
The Swiss people actually participate in strong 10s and they're advancing.
Women or?
Yeah, women, sure. Yeah, the men have all moved here.
Yes, okay. Well, you're the last one who didn't come here yet.
That's okay. Right, yes.
Okay, yeah. About decision-making in the tens, if a decision that is made is against the spirit or against what you say, can I resist it or...
You need to steer up, bring up the things that seem to you this way, for or against. Maybe it's worthwhile for you to bring your opinions together before everyone, and then we can discuss them. It's not about a 10. Tomorrow it will change, and instead of the 10, we'll have something else. Rather, it's about integration. So, some framework in which I am included with the others. What is the 10? Certainly, there is in it from a lot about it from the sources, and it's according to the structure of the world. That is true. But don't look at it as though, if I'm here, that's it. It's a marriage. We can't get a divorce. I'm chained to that. That's it. No, you can change it. You can be in several tens. You can unite tens into what we can call a bigger ten, in which there are maybe 30 or 40 people. It all depends on how much we will feel ourselves as unified. When the 10 turns into 1 for me, then through it I can really connect with everyone.
Unity, integration, and nullification, basically, is what we should have.
Yes.
But if something contradicts the path or the study or what you're saying, should I still nullify and go towards integration, or say, up to here, guys, you're off track, I'm not agreeing with this, or I should nullify and go with it?
No, if you feel that both the goal and the way to get there is not according to the sources, then you have to object. And if this is how it is, you have to tell us, because all in all, this 10 from the overall group is weakening us. It's like a cancer within the general body. You should not hide that, because by that you're harming. Even if you give them quiet, leave them to be quietly, you're actually harming everyone by your agreement. That's very serious. And we have to take care of it. Either, well, simply discuss it and scrutinize it. In the end, everyone will agree. But this will take a long time. And what can we do about it? All right. Is that it? Yes.
The question that was scrutinized now with Emmanuel is actually one that is very that prevalent in all the world. Clear, they're asking about the tens and the combinations. So if we draw the conclusion, do we need to build group of tens of people who meet all the criterions, and with it build tens that support weaker circles?
Yes, certainly. We want to build tens out of all kinds of people that want to be connected virtually, physically, doesn't matter how, doesn't matter which conditions they have, but in terms of their participation, what they can meet and what they cannot. That is very important. The intensity that the Congress had is in particular because we started the work in the tents.
Does it involve reorganization? It involves reorganization of the tens, because part of this problem we heard exists in most of the world, clearly, mostly in the virtual groups.
I think that the strong people who have an inclination to organize people, they should, in addition to their own ten, also participate in building tens that are from our weaker circles. And to be both here and there, here he's as a friend, and there he's as a Rav, who is a friend. There is such a notion. Yes, Moti.
I heard you saying now that the corruptions in the patterns of our tens is a copy of what we see in humanity? Could be?
The corruptions that are in us are certainly also a result of the corruptions in humanity. Yes, so? Because we're all integrated with one another. In each one of us, there are all the corruptions of the whole world. And everyone have 613 desires that should be corrected.
So we have to change the work, our style of work, or we have to focus on this?
No, inside we are doing our work according to what is written in the sources, in the origins, but a part of what we correct is because there is such a corruption in the world. And by correcting ourselves, we're also correcting the world. As written, that a person who is correcting himself is also correcting the degrees of the still, vegetative, animate, and human that arise with the human. Also, the degree of the Adam, human, in the human, meaning us who are related to the fourth discernment, Bechina Daled. When we correct ourselves, we are also correcting the degrees of still, vegetative, and animate in the human species. Why? Because we are incorporated with them. All right? Well, yes?
If we're talking about the groups, so a question perhaps about unity of groups. Sometimes we have groups who are very close to each other. For instance, like Kfar Saba and Ra'anana. It's just one road between them. In one place there's 10 men, in the other place 20. What's the most correct thing to do?
I have no idea. In Israel, to move from one street to the next is as if going from one city to another overseas. And moving from one town to another, it's like flying overseas. Really. And so on. This is the mentality we have here. And therefore, I cannot say what you should do. If there is a constant quorum, minyan, in every city, you don't have to unite with another city. I don't think so. It will only burden them. I hope that we will have a new building and groups will come here more often, both for the Shabbat and also for during the ordinary days, also for all kinds of works, dissemination, etc. And I think that will happen. But everyone likes it to be close to him. That's our mentality. And I see also overseas, everywhere, people want to have it really close to home.
You spoke yesterday about that if there's a possibility to be part of a bigger group, then it's better, meaning if you can be part of a bigger group and not a small group.
No, but when you connect, and let's say you sit there in Kfar Saba or Ra'anana, you actually connect with us, but only in order to keep the place and go out to dissemination, then it may be worthwhile for you to connect between you and do the dissemination together. That's something else. But here I cannot decide anything. Those are very specific local things, and I don't think that... I believe that nonetheless, all of those things, what will change them is the light that reforms. A person will start feeling more, understanding more, being more integrated with the others, he'll have a greater strength, a strength of perseverance, and that's how he'll advance. I hang everything on that, but not on some nice words or unification or non-unification of physical groups. The correction has to come from within. And then it is possible to speak to a person. Otherwise, all of these external cosmetics doesn't really do anything. Yes, a little bit. It prepares and brings one closer, but it's not really significant, essential changes. Fine, I have a question. How was it felt in the other hall, in the what we call the higher hall? How was the Congress felt? Was it good? So you didn't miss anything. There's no difference between them? He says that certainly there is a difference.
I think it's really not good to have two halls. In the higher hall, it was very hard, and many people were outside. Many people were outside in all the activities.
Why?
I don't know.
No, maybe it's such a quantity of people, such a number of people that are always on the outside. And for them, instead of sitting in a tent, they prefer to sit on the outside. It's the same. For them, this is called participating in the Congress.
It's the difference between this and the smaller convention that we had with criterions, that we were just like a ball rolling between the two halls. And here we had the gathering of friends were very powerful. Everyone was inside. It was really was unparalleled. But in the workshops and the lessons was hard for people.
Well, I'm not used to it. Most of the people are not used to it.
In the lower hall, there were also many seats. There was there was an instruction to sit there, and many sat there. But basically, we were able to sit inside.
Well, people are unable to, I guess, sit down and listen, and it's really hard to sit down for many hours. Maybe we should shorten the times, an hour and not more of a lesson, an hour and not more of a workshop. Really like that, even less, 3/4 of an hour, another 3/4 of an hour. Because I can see that people don't have the nerves to do it.
What turned the gathering of friends to so powerful was that we were in one place, one hall, and although we were crowded.
Of course, Yeshivat Havarim cannot be any other way.
If we shorten the lesson or shorten the workshops, if we're still in two separate places, it won't necessarily be the solution.
Okay. I hear you. Fine. We are going to move to the Zohar, and we'll think about what to do next. Fine.